You're listening to Death of the Reader. Flex and Herds here for your Murder Mystery World Tour, and we are back with our second novel for 2022, Abiya Mukherjee's The Shadows of Men, the fifth book in the Sam Windham series. This is a thriller novel. We're going chapters 1 to 18 today, Herds.
Bit of an action-packed time, isn't it? My goodness, gunfights, gangs, arson.
This is our third story, second novel of 2022, and we're returning to the fair shores of the subcontinent.
We're still in India.
I should say, the reason I wanted to cover this book, we've spoken with Vaseem Khan several times on the show now, and his co-conspirator over on the Red Hot Chili Writers podcast is Abiya Mukherjee. And I felt like, with this book fresh out the gates, a recent discussion between Solari Gentil and Abiya that I really enjoyed from the folks over at Bad Crime Sydney, that it would just be remiss of us not to touch on Abiya's work. Herds, are you feeling brave enough to recap us on what's happened so far?
Oh, no, definitely not. But look, let me tell you what my mind remembers. Because I've just finished reading chapter 18 moments before stepping into the ring, as it were. So, you know.
Literally seconds ago, he was reading it aloud, pinned in a dark room with a single light bulb hung above his head.
Yeah.
Strapped to a metal table.
Corkboard in front of me. All that good stuff. So the way I remember it is, first off, the structure of this book is fantastic, as we jump between the perspectives of two detectives.
Yes.
Sam Windham. He's full of hot air. He's a giant ham. He's great. He's British. He's hard boiled, and he loves to put down riots.
Yes.
Peacefully if possible. And the other is Detective Surendranath Banerjee. His nickname is Surendranaut, because he never gives up. Mm-hmm. And that's what he's doing in this novel, because he's being threatened with conviction by the murder of a Mukherjee, Prashant Mukherjee.
No relation to the author.
Relation to the author, who is Abiya Mukherjee. It's very confusing. But apparently what happened is that Saren showed up to Mukherjee's house after tailing another man for unrelated reasons and found Mukherjee dead. And he thought, what do I do when I find the body of a religious leader?
Yes.
You know, dead in his own home, possibly killed by someone who is another religious leader of the other religion that's in India, the Hindus and the Muslims. He says, well, I'm gonna burn the house down.
Yeah.
And he's unsuccessful, to say the least.
I absolutely love getting this book as an introduction to Saren and Sam.
It's great.
Because it is just so immediately apparent out the gate how just completely these guys disrespect common sense, let's say. We start with a little flash forward from Surendranaut, who is talking about how he's not really guilty of the things that he's accused of. And then we cut back in time just a little bit to see Sam meeting with a gang boss by the name of Udham the Lion Singh, who they were basically trying to blackmail into not committing crime.
It's great.
Which is a sentence that I feel is very self-explanatory.
It's very silly. I think that this novel really goes a long way, and I enjoy this, to create drama by virtue of these main characters just being such incredible loose cannons.
Yes.
And I do really enjoy that. And yeah, as you say, we kind of cut back and forth between Siren committing the arson and his investigation in the past, and then also Windham's present as he races to figure out what actually happened. That's like the first, maybe the first quarter of the novel. Which I actually really enjoyed, because it means we can skip a lot of the stuff that doesn't matter by having the other detective talk about more important things and mention the less important stuff in passing, if that makes sense, which I actually really enjoyed. We get all of the highlights. Well, most of the highlights. We mostly get highlights, mostly guns and explosions and setting things on fire, which I really enjoy.
But essentially, our timelines kind of reunite as we get Suren out of prison and go to see the police commissioner to sort out this whole mess. Then the police commissioner is hit with a makeshift grenade.
Yep.
And then Suren, realizing that he'll probably be hung because people will assume it's him, decides that the best option is to go on the run and make himself look less suspicious.
The contrived situation here is that Suren was sent on basically a special mission by Taggart. So now that Taggart can't tell anyone what's going on because he's been injured.
Yeah.
If he dies and Suren can't find any evidence to protect himself, he will hang.
Yeah.
So he points a gun at Sam. The only person,
his best friend
in the whole wide world, and the only person he can trust, he points a gun at him and says, "You know what? This is what I got to do, Sam. I got to go on the run. I got to take Lord Taggart's pistol, because apparently that's what we're doing now, and run off and try and hunt down the killers." It is ridiculous.
Yeah, I think the other thing that I wanted to touch on in this section before we get onto the mystery in quotations next is the city that we're set in. Both of the previous novels that we've covered in India have been in Bombay.
Classic
one
Mumbai.
In 1850s, one in 1950s, and this novel takes place in between the two world wars in 1923 Calcutta. Sam is a veteran of the First World War, and we get to hear some pretty grisly details of him going through no man's land under Taggart's orders when they both served on the Western Front.
What a terrible story. Oh, it's so
grim.
It's so good. Yeah, it's great, because the point that he's making is, you know, sir, and you were sent on this mission by Lord Taggart. I've been sent on a suicide charge before too. I know what it's like.
By the same guy.
By the same guy. Maybe you should watch out, which is fantastic. It's a fantastic way to frame the story, I think. It's not just another terrible war story from a world war. It's like, this has very tangible implications on what's going on right now.
Yeah, and I think Calcutta's a really interesting place to set it too, because, you know, it's not to say that Calcutta has become a ghost town since the British left. But I think a lot of people in the West think of it a lot less now that it doesn't have that Western identity, even though it definitely still has a lot of interesting culture and the aftermath of the kind of cultural turmoil that we see in this book.
It is such a huge part of this novel. Like the thrust of the murder is that obviously Mukherjee, a Hindu religious leader, has been murdered, presumably by an Islamic religious leader. And that's leading to not just the threat of, oh, what if people find out about this and bad things occur, but like people are already finding out about this and there are riots in the streets. And something that I also kind of foreshadowed earlier cleverly is that Sam is forced to take command of a small group, a dozen British soldiers they're traffic conductors or something.
Yeah.
But he's like, all right, we gotta deal with these riots that are occurring. We don't have the manpower to do this. So run, boys. Like, we're going to hold them off for a few seconds, build a barricade, and then run.
Yep.
Because even though the British are ostensibly here to, like, help keep the peace between these two religious groups, they really don't have the manpower. They don't have the ability to keep the situation under control.
And the novel goes to lengths to point out that this is in the pause of Gandhi's, I guess, protest.
Yes.
And that means that no one really knows where to direct their anger. And one thing I found really fascinating was how often Abir, through Sam's eyes, will just make, I guess, very British comments on the nature of the natives.
Mm.
You know, he says, like, there's something in the Bengali psyche which is predisposed towards self-destruction.
It's so interesting. I love Sam as a character because, as you say, he is kind of racist. He is... which you might call one of the better ones, as it were, but he still has that British mindset of thinking, you know, we have to control the situation.
Calling Sam one of the better ones really relies on the I have an Indian friend defense.
Well, that's his only defense. That is his defense. Some of my friends are Indians too, one of my friends is.
I mean, there was something you said to me that I really loved, where you said that it was like walking through a fog and occasionally stepping on barbs.
Yeah.
And compare that to Seren, who, for example, poses as the aide of a poet, and then upon meeting a couple of other people, immediately thinks to himself, oh, hang on, these people would know that poet, I'll pose as someone else. Like, he is in the mind of the people, despite also still not quite fitting in, such as this really, I guess, cute moment where he says that it's imperative he has to meet with someone, and the person goes, where'd you learn that?
That's a big word. It's very good. No, I think that the dynamic, considering that they're not even on screen together, the kind of dynamic that the two characters have, the two detectives have, Suren, really, he has those street smarts. And Sam has, I think, gun smarts might be the best way to put it.
I think that's probably reasonable, yeah.
He doesn't know the streets as well as you think he does. And that's why, presumably, in the previous four books, they probably worked very, very well together.
Anyhow, I think, Herds, we shall put a pause on this there. We'll come back in the last part of the show today to discuss the quote-unquote mystery of this novel.
The quote-unquote mystery. Yeah, I was curious.
There is a dead man, an unknown murderer, and a lot of intrigue, but
is there a
certainly
killer?
Not a closed circle.
Yeah, the biggest question is, have we even met the murderer yet? Yes, that's the biggest question I have.
Anyway, you're listening to Death of the Reader. We are discussing Abir Mukherjee's The Shadows of Men, chapters 1 to 18. This is your Murder Mystery World Tour here on 2SER. Stick around. You're listening to Death of the Reader, Flex and Herds here for your Murder Mystery World Tour and Herds.
Flex?
We've received a message.
Have we?
Someone dropped in our inbox, which you can get to via the 2SER website. A message to the effect of, boys, this isn't enough Indian fiction.
Ah.
And ignoring the fact that this person has access to the internet, but apparently not Google, I thought we should bring a few more Indian novels to the table for people who are curious to check out a bit more, both of the descendants of expatriates writing from around the world and from local authors to India and the subcontinent writing of their homeland.
I mean, look, clearly they need the Flex and Herd stamp of approval, which I could agree with. I wouldn't read a book that I didn't recommend in the first place.
Yeah, so. I think the first one that I wanted to draw your attention to, just because we're talking about The Shadows of Men on this episode, is Abir Mukherjee's Smoke and Ashes. It's the third book in the Sam Windham and Surendranath Banerjee series. It's set in 1921 and basically goes into Sam Windham's, at the time, serious opium addiction. He finds a corpse in the opium den that he's in and, of course, has to somehow solve this mystery, but not let out to his superiors how he found the corpse.
Of course.
A few fans of the series have messaged me and told me this is the book that got them hooked on the series, which is always fantastic.
It's the best one, maybe.
And it is the one that is described as a brilliantly conceived murder mystery by C.J. Sansom, which is printed on the cover of a few of the Sam Windham series books.
I mean, you always enjoy a novel where the detective's career is on the line because of their own faults and foibles. I think what we could really recommend the whole of the Sam Windham and Suren franchise, I suppose, because of that very reason. Watching those two get up to any trouble they can possibly get themselves into.
What have you got first for us?
Yeah. So obviously, you know, we're mentioning novels that are in our sphere of influence that are kind of tied to, you know, stuff we've already covered on the show. And I would be remiss if I didn't bring up the next Kamil Rahman book by R.J. Chowdhury. The Cook, which is coming out later this year. Kamil Rahman, if you may have read The Waiter, which is the first novel. And I had a lovely interview with R.J. Chowdhury last year about that novel. And in the second novel, he has graduated from being a waiter to a cook in a Brooklyn restaurant. So good on him. He's moving up in the world. But the twist of this character is that he used to be a detective before essentially being disgraced and thrown out. It's a whole thing. And very much is about shining a light on the corruption of the Indian police force, which is, you know, not something that's usually covered. So it's very unique in that regard. But yeah, so a young woman that Camille knows is murdered, and they figure that her boyfriend is the culprit. And so Camille says, you know, I'll look into it, and I'll bring my friend Anjali along as well, who is troubled by a rise in homeless deaths in their area. And I'm sure these cases are not at all, you know, affiliated with each other. I had to let you know, I've been reading The Torrent by Danuka McKenzie, and there's kind of a similar thing going on in that book where there's one more specific crime and one more general crime that seem to be disconnected, but you're sure they're going to come together in the end somehow.
All right. The next one I wanted to draw your attention to is Salil Desai's 3.5 Murders from the Sarwalkar Mystery series. This one really interested me. Basically, it's your standard murder mystery setup. We have multiple corpses, a suicide note that also functions as a bit of a murder confession, and we go on a long ride through the eyes of Senior Inspector Sarwalkar, who has just been diagnosed with hypertension, and that kind of plays into things. I actually did get the chance to read this one. We haven't read everything on our list today.
Yeah.
But this is set on the west coast of India in Pune, and sticks the landing in a few ways, but it's also like a little bit clunky. It's clear that Salil Desai isn't the most, I guess, English speaker.
Sure.
Some of the conversations are a bit clunky. There's a bit more tell than show, but I still enjoyed the ride and I still thought it really stuck the landing. Mm. So it's like, it's a little clunky and maybe a little weird if you're coming into it as a native English speaker, but I still enjoyed it.
Now, I'll let you know, there's another novel that I want to spotlight here. And I also haven't read this one. I do plan on though. This novel drew my attention just because of how many ellipses are involved in the description on everywhere that I've been able to find this novel. All the advertisement. Look, I know this is the beginning point, but this novel, it's called The Calcutta Conundrum, which, you know, we've been in Calcutta recently for the shows of men. So I figured, why not visit the city again through a different lens? And it's by Soman Chatterjee. And it follows a character named Pratik, who is son of IPS officer Pratyush Basur. And he returns home to Calcutta during the annual Durga Puja celebration. And he finds out that a man has had his home broken into and assaulted. And the twist here, of course, is that the guy has gone into a coma, but the core of the story is around unraveling this man's events, this man who's like dying. And I definitely brought images of poor Inspector Taggart to mind as I was looking through this novel here.
Yeah, yeah.
The idea of like, you know, if only we could ask this person the one question, you know, what has been stolen from you? How can we find your attackers? You know, everything will be solved in an instant. But of course, it's about picking up the pieces and really delving into the history of this character. And that really appeals to me. And as this little paragraph says here, will the ruthless criminals be busted? Read on to know.
Dot, dot,
ten,
dot,
ten
dot,
dots. Dot, yeah. Dot, it's dot, beautiful.
Dot.
So I'm looking forward to reading that one.
Yeah, the next one I wanted to talk about is the Pervine Mystery Series by Sujata Massey. She's a US-based author who's written a lengthy series of Japanese historical novels, and Pervine Mystery is her first foray into Indian historical fiction. Set in Bombay in 1921, the first one is called Murder at Malabar Hill, or The Widow of Malabar Hill, depending on your region. I need to know what it is with Malabar Hill and why it keeps popping up in every damn story we cover. The reason this one's so interesting is that Pervine Mystery is based on an amalgamation of two real-life feminist trailblazers, Camellia Sorabji and Mithan Tadalam. And the book is beautifully presented, really charming, and has a pretty good mystery for a modern cozy. I had great fun reading this one.
I have to assume, based on the amount of times I've seen Malabar Hill, even in novels that I would think would have nothing to do with Malabar Hill, even a, you know, murder mystery adjacent novels from India, I feel like it's a fake place. I feel like it's like a fairy tale. Like, on Malabar Hill, you will find the truth and the Firebird will take you there. That's my assumption. I don't believe it's a real place. That said, the third novel I wanted to kind of mention here is written by Baroness Kishwa Desai. This is part of the Simran Singh series, which has three books currently. The first of which is called Witness the Night, winner of the Costa First Novel Award. It's kind of a terrifying sounding murder mystery, right? There's a burning building with 13 people found dead inside, and a young girl beaten and barely alive. And of course, the detectives, they're looking for someone to blame, someone to accuse, and she's the only person there, so they accuse the young girl. And of course, in comes Simran Singh, an independent-minded, unconventional social worker to go against, you know, the police corruption and the expectations of the men around her and that sort of thing. Yeah, it sounds like a truly terrifying march into hell, which really is fantastic.
Yeah, I bet. The last one I wanted to bring today is Ankush Saikia from the United States, his Arjun Aurora, the 2018 iteration of that series, More Bodies Will Fall. Someone recommended to me as a kind of similar tone novel to The Shadows of Men, very high octane action up in India's northeast on the border with Myanmar, involving a bit of espionage with the CIA. I haven't had the chance to read this one of the list, but it was sold to me on the fact that Arjun is a very positive character despite all of the adversity that he's going through, and it makes like this really dark tale kind of fun to go through in a similar way to how Sam and Seren are. So I'm definitely excited to get my teeth into that one.
I'm really looking forward to doing, you know, more Indian novels. And of course, in my own time, reading more of these, because there's a really fantastic selection of crime fiction and detective fiction, murder mystery in the Indian field.
I mean, one of the things that does suck a little bit about Death of the Reader is that because we cover novels in such depth, we don't get to as many.
Unfortunately.
So I hope that, yeah, this will give you the chance to spread your wings a little bit and discover the things that we didn't have time to get to this leg through India, though there's still a few more books to come.
Yep, yep.
And who knows, maybe we'll come back to these on another journey to the subcontinent.
Well, that's the hope. It just depends how long we can keep going for. That's all. When I'm 80 years old, I want to come back and I want to read every one of these books. That's my plan.
Anyhow, we're going to get back into the Shadows of Men in just a second. You are listening to Death of the Reader, your murder mystery world tour here on 2SER. Stick around. You're listening to Death of the Reader. Flex and Herds here for your Murder Mystery World Tour. We are discussing The Shadows of Man by Abir Mukherjee, chapters 1 to 18. Our second novel of the year, Herds. Our first thriller of the year. There's normally one or two slip through the cracks. But
how dare they?
This is a murder mystery show, so you nonetheless have a puzzle to solve.
I suppose.
The religious leader, Prashant, the prize-ass Mukherjee, no relation to the author, was found strangled in his house. Detective Surendranath Banerjee tried to burn the house down to cover up the evidence, and it's all backfired. Now the people are even more whipped up that someone would try to burn their leader alive.
Mm-hmm.
What's really going on?
That's a good question. Can I tell you that as I was reading through this novel, I was working under a theory that that Suren was not actually telling us everything that was going on. I'm still not 100% throwing that idea away, but I feel like as this is a thriller and not like a tricksy, topsy-turvy clinical murder mystery, that may not be the case. But you're right. The sort of situation here is that Suren was investigating a guy named Farid Gul Muhammad, who's a Bombay financier.
Yes.
And apparently he's heading to Bombay right this second as we speak in the novel.
He's heading to walk straight into the next Vasim Khan novel.
Yeah, he is. He's heading right over
there. Abir has to work his absolute hardest to keep him on his pages.
Well, I was going to say, if he's heading into Vasim's novel, then he can't be the killer because he'd be behind bars. That'd be a bit difficult. But I think it would be difficult to suspect Gul Muhammad, given that he is our prime suspect.
You don't think that Abir Mukherjee could put together a compelling enough novel where the answer was straightforward and the excitement was elsewhere?
I mean, look, there has been plenty of excitement. There have been all sorts of car chases and gun chases and things going on. Mm-hmm. But I think that for the purposes, certainly in the first week of putting together a theory, I'd rather go for tastier meats. Because, yeah, I think that, you know,
I really hope that you're not about to suggest what I think you are after that particular phraseology.
I definitely am. But let's go through this. So there's a whole bunch of characters. There are servants and drivers. Major Boyle is the military man who shows up to take over the investigation. He's pretty suspicious. But I think for the purposes of this theory, I want to point the finger squarely at the ultimate shadow of man, woman. Yeah, historical pun there. There's a lady who, because we got Gul Muhammad, who is the suspect, and he's got a niece named Aisha, and she's lovely, and Suren is completely smitten with her. And specifically, he says, he doesn't say, I'm sure I could trust her. He says, I'm sure I can trust her words.
It's true. She is also the one playing an instrument that would take a lifetime to perfect. So she's clearly the kind of person with the focus and determination to set up a Rube Goldberg-like machine to get her uncle murdered.
Look, I'm just saying, apparently he was strangled, which, you know, I reckon she could kill him with some kind of rope or a garrote or something. Who knows?
Oh, you reckon that he was garrotted by one of the strings of her instrument?
I was going to say that, but I've forgotten what instrument it is.
It's like a hammered dulcimer, but there's a particular name.
Oh,
for it.
A hammered dulcimer. Oh, what a precious, precious instrument that I have a lot of history with. I won't go into that now, but yeah, look, she's underestimated. We don't even get a name the first time she appears on screen. Obviously the author, Mukherjee, is trying to hide her away so that he can spring her on us at the last minute as the killer because she's been living in the shadow of her uncle, Gul Muhammad.
Oh my Free goodness.
Gul Muhammad. That's what it is. She is the shadow of that man. And she's like, I want in on this Bombay financier nonsense Or maybe she's working with Adam the Lion Singh. Sky's the limit.
I mean, it's true. At the start of the novel, Seren, in his opening monologue, does say that in a world marked by the shadows of men, it is those who have no shadow who are the most dangerous of all.
Yes.
Explicitly,
because the men have shadows.
Explicitly avoiding any any pronouns in that last clause there, just to make it even more suspicious.
She doesn't have a shadow.
Upon poor Aisha.
She's a vampire, obviously. Okay. Scratch that. I mean, maybe.
What I'm saying here is that the only foreshadow here that we have, the female mastermind, let's say, the girl boss, taking control of situation here.
I love that you're getting in on the new kid lingo, just like me, following
I'm
in my
trying
footsteps.
My best. I felt really encouraged by Vasim enjoying my use of the term clowning upon.
Your use? Didn't I begin? You know, it doesn't matter.
We both did.
Whoever
it was
did.
The second time it was used that he commented on it.
That's great.
Which,
I'm
to
glad
be fair, was your
it.
Usage. I don't mean to take credit away from you here, but it was
it
a collaborative
doesn't matter.
Effort.
The point is, the man knows good comedy. Look, I would say that, look, the book's called Shadows of Men. There's gender. That exists. The man who's injured is a lord, which is also a very gendered term. Well, Lord Commissioner, but you know, lords are like, that's a male thing. There's no queens in here, as far as we know, not yet.
I guess the next thing I wanted to ask is, this all seems like a big distraction to shy away from the fact that you cannot explain who threw the grenade over the commissioner's fence and injured.
It was probably Aisha.
You reckon it was Aisha?
No,
car full of goons? On their way to their next gig.
No, I have been thinking about this. It's got to be the person who like orchestrated the attack has to be someone who knew about Lord Taggart's meeting.
Mm-hmm.
I struggle to figure out who that might be. I may have to go through the notes one more time.
I mean, it's true. He was dragging Seren out of arrest to instead house arrest in his company.
Well, they make a point of it. They say, well, wouldn't Lord Taggart normally be at his office? Why would they even think he'd be at his home? Although it's possible that Taggart was not even the target. It's quite possible that Seren was the target.
Well, I mean, here's the question I have. We have that entire passage we mentioned earlier talking about Taggart sending Sam on a suicide mission. And then the next thing that happens is Major Boyle shows up, replacing the normal colonel who would be in charge of these things, and says, oh, those men over there who died in this attack, they were army men, so this is my jurisdiction now. You reckon he's throwing his troops under the bus?
Look, Major is definitely very suspicious. I don't know if he'll be like the criminal mastermind, but I don't like him. He's definitely a pawn, if nothing else. I will say I am very curious, because there was one piece of information noted that Lord Taggart has an undetonated bomb under his desk, which is like a weird detail to put in the book, unless it has some sort of significance.
My assumption there was that the bomb had had its explosives safely diffused off, and it was just the shell that was on his desk.
But still, I agree. It may not be that bomb has literally
also, it was a paperweight.
Was
he was
one,
using it as a paperweight.
Yeah, he was using it as a paperweight. I'm not saying that it literally went off, although, look, our protagonists are Sam and Seren, so who knows? Who knows what crazes they get up to? But I think it lends itself to a certain degree of cocksuredness on the part of Taggart.
It's true. I think it really would be the kind of office gift that Sam and Seren would give, would be a live explosive.
I agree. They're like, we disarmed it, Lord Taggart. Totally. We did it. And then they like huddle up to the side like, are you sure you made sure to disarm it? Like, yeah, sure I did.
Yeah, no, definitely.
And he bonks him on the head, Three Stooges style. That's my assumption. Look, I'll tell you what. I'm going to put forward Aisha, because she wants to stop living in the shadow of the men in her life.
Yeah, yeah.
Udam the Lion Singh and
I mean, listen,
Adal
based
Muhammad.
On the title of the book, I think it makes sense that Aisha is your suspect
that, nothing
here.
Else. But Major Boyle is a close second.
Yeah, but my money would definitely be on Major Boyle here.
I would agree.
Anyway, the producers have sent me a message to say that it is the Santur is the particular variety of hammered dulcimer in question.
There you go. Thank you, producers. We appreciate
that
it.
That takes 30 years to learn, to master.
That's too long.
Who knows? Maybe in 30 years you'll finally be able to solve a murder mystery, Herds.
Maybe I will. It's true. I haven't done it yet on the show, so, you know. But no, look, I'd put money on Major Boyle. It is very suspicious that he knows all the details about the case instantly, like he has an encyclopedic brain. He was clearly like prepared for the attack.
Yep, yep.
Which is very interesting. And he's very, very quick to throw shade at Sam.
Yeah.
I did notice that.
It's really fantastic. Anyhow, we will be back next week with more of The Shadows of Men. We're going to be covering chapters 19 to 43 next week. Herd, best of luck.
Thank you, Flex. I will do my darndest to catch the killer, whoever they might be.
Keep your eyes peeled.
I will peel them. I will peel them with an apple peeler. Don't do that.
Fantastic.
I would never encourage that.
Please don't. This is,
please don't use apple peelers.
This is Death of the Reader, your murder mystery world tour here on 2SER. We'll be back, as I said, with Abby and Mukherjee's The Shadows of Men. We'll see you then.